America.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Negotiations from 20 countries, including the U.S., are meeting in Tokyo to develop a follow-up to the Kyoto Protocol on global warming. The Bush administration originally pulled out of Kyoto, saying it would harm U.S. business. Yahoo beat Wall Street expectations by posting better-than-expected quarterly profits nearing $269 million. Stocks rose 6% in late trading yesterday. Advanced Micro Devices saw its stock drop more than 4% after the companies announced a quarterly net loss of $574 million. The cost of AMD's aggressive competition with Intel are being blamed for the lowered numbers. Unisys, which is in the midst of restructuring, posted a quarterly net profit of $21.3 million yet today. This time last year, Unisys reported a $31 million net loss. Corning also turned a loss into a quarterly profit. Earnings profit was $499 million, driven by strong sales of glass it makes for flat panel TVs. And California's defaulting on their mortgage loans are increasing dramatically. Default notices surged by 145% during the last quarter of 2006. It was the largest number of defaults in any quarter since 1998. Light sweet crude is trading at $54.12 a barrel on Wall Street this hour. Dow Jones is up 46, NASDAQ up 30, and the S&P up 7. You're listening to the...
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, did you see the State of the Union last night? Most Americans didn't. It's one of the least watched State of the Unions in recent history. Not that they're even watched that often when they are watched, but... It actually wasn't even one of the more impressive ones. So, heck, you know, that's what I'm here for. As I say on the blog, I watch, so you don't have to. And we'll go through the various things the president said or didn't say, and sometimes what he didn't say is more interesting. The part that was most enjoyable, though, and the part I think everyone was watching for, was watching the most powerful person give a wonderful performance. Her name, of course, is Nancy Pelosi. She is probably the most powerful person in the United States today, given that the president really doesn't have much support, not just from the Democrats, but even from his own Republicans, and certainly not from the American people. Cheney looked downright tired behind the president, but it was truly a joy for the first time in all of American history to have a woman standing there behind the president. You can argue, I think she's the most powerful. She's certainly one of the three most powerful people in the United States. But to have her there and to have another view expressed, and instead of having the yes men behind Bush standing up and clapping as pretty much on cue, it was really nice to see, to see, was Nancy Pelosi going to stand? Was Dick Cheney going to stand? Who was going to clap? I thought she gave some great faces. I mean, I think most of us in America were watching her face more than anyone else's, and it seemed to express, well, the right emotions. Seriousness of purpose, troubling expressions in her face, clapping on the applause lines that everyone has to clap for. It was very interesting, and I have to say, George Bush was graceful. He was very nice, of course, to turn around and to say, to remind America that this was the first time ever in America anyone had... president had stood up and said, Madam Speaker. So it was a pleasure seeing her there. Really, there was a whole mood that made this State of the Union very different from the others. And, of course, it didn't come from the president. It came from the audience. It came from knowing that the Democrats were in control in Congress. And the president, I don't know, part of him seemed to be on in the sense of recognizing there's a new sheriff in town. Most State of the Union speeches make me angry. Most of the union speeches, it's sort of lie after lie after lie, and it makes me angry, and I have to respond to each and every part. This was a president who didn't seem angry. He didn't even seem that aggressive. He seemed kind of, for lack of a better word, castrated. He was there. He spoke. But he didn't have real passion in what he said. And it seemed that he was trying somewhat to reach out to the Democrats, at least to make America look like he was reaching out to the Democrats. But when you look at his proposals, well, most of them were virtually nothing. And when you heard him talk about Iraq, you could practically hear the crickets outside. Very little clapping, very little support. It seems almost as if he were talking in the mirror rather than talking to members of Congress. It was also fun to watch the presidential candidates. How many are there now? 17, I think, in both parties. This is, of course, the most wide-open election we've had pretty much in American history. I can't think back to the last time in American history you didn't have either a sitting president or a sitting vice president run for election. My quick memory bank suggests it's been an awfully long time because I can't really think of a time. Let's see. No, 68 was Nixon, sitting vice president. Adlai Stevenson, then Eisenhower. Okay, there we go. 52. 1952, maybe the last time, more than 50 years ago. So it is a wide open race, and it was fun watching all those people in the chamber respond. So let's talk about the State of the Union. And you're welcome, of course, to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and let me know what you thought, or 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you didn't see the speech, the president, interestingly, did not begin on Iraq. He did not begin on his weakest note. He began on domestic issues. But they were kind of warmed over domestic issues. He didn't sort of fight for most of his extreme proposals. Let's go through. First, of course, he addressed Madam Speaker, which was the right thing to do, obviously. And then he made a very careful wish for the recovery of Senator Tim Johnson. Republicans behind closed doors are, of course, very gleeful, hopeful that Senator Tim Johnson will kick off and die, because if he does, then, heck, the Republican governor of South Dakota appoints a Republican. That gives them 50-50. Cheney breaks the deciding vote. They control the Senate. So while they very much wish Tim Johnson to croak in their private lives, in public, the president, of course, can't say that, and so he wished Senator Tim Johnson a speedy recovery, and he did congratulate the Democratic majority and began his speech by saying things that, well, really, they're very hard to disagree with. We want to serve good purposes. Okay, yeah. We want to extend this nation's prosperity. Okay, spend people's money wisely, solve problems, not leave them to future generations. Guard America against all evil, keep faith with those who sent forth to defend us, blah, blah, blah. You know, who can disagree with apple pie and America? And, of course, those are sort of some basic applause lines. The question, of course, is not, is it good to support good? Is it nice to make this country richer and to spend the nation's money wisely? But what specifically is he going to do? The other, of course, bromide that he proposed is that we reach out across the aisle and we work together, and, of course, everybody clapped with that. But then he got to specifics, and the first thing he dealt with was the economy. Now, it's interesting because, obviously, most people's thoughts are on Iraq, but both the president and the Democratic response, led by the new Virginia senator, Jim Webb, dealt with the economy. And it's amazing how differently Democrats and Republicans see the economy. Bush said, quote, "We are now in the 41st month of uninterrupted job growth, a recovery that has created 7.2 million jobs so far." Yay! Well, let's be specific. The first 3 years of the Bush presidency lost us 4 million jobs. Since then, we've gained the 7 million that he mentions, netting 3 million. Okay? Like I said, if somebody steals from you $400 and then gives you back $700, has he given you $700? No, he's given you $300. So that's 3 million jobs. Now, let's just compare with, say, another Republican president in his sixth year, Ronald Reagan. Not the best president we've ever had, but better than George Bush. In 6 years, Ronald Reagan had created 10 million jobs, and Bill Clinton, in his sixth year, 17 million jobs, or about six times better than this president. You see, Every day we have new Americans born. We have 300 million Americans now. We certainly have not had that many in the past. So, you know, by sheer numbers, you're going to accidentally create some jobs if you do nothing. The thing is, it's really been an anemic creation of jobs. As I said, 3 million in 6 years compared to Clinton's 17 million. But the president didn't mention that. In fact, when he talks about 3 years of job growth, let's see, we had 3 years of job falling and 3 years of job growth. So on average, we're about breaking even, I guess. The next thing he dealt with, well, earmarks. Now, this was shocking. Republicans have defended earmarks for the last 12 years. What are earmarks? Earmarks are secret ways for members of Congress to stick millions, sometimes billions, usually hundreds of millions of dollars in the pocket of a certain constituent, often one that gave them a bunch of money for their campaign. Both parties do it. Certainly West Virginia, Robert Byrd is known for having the Robert Byrd Center on, oh, who knows what, throughout the state of West Virginia. But it's mostly a Republican thing. The Republicans have brought earmarks from being a bad problem in the early 90s to being an astoundingly bad problem, 4, 5, 6 times what they used to be before, and they defended them. They defended the right to secretly stick taxpayer money in their constituents' way. What they do is they don't have a vote on these things, but they put them in the committee reports and they put them in other little places, and then suddenly taxpayers are out $100,000 for a rainforest in Iowa or $200 million for a bridge to nowhere in Alaska. Well, the Democrats came to power to fight corruption. They came to power to end things like earmarks. And the president, who never had a problem with this massive spending to special interests during the entire 6 years of his presidency, now he's a true believer. Now he's on board. Well, he could have said that I was wrong. He could have said, for 6 years I've supported this and I've changed my mind. He could have said, now that the Democrats are in power, I think I need to bow to their will and get rid of earmarks. Of course, he said none of these things. He pretended like getting rid of earmarks was his idea. So much for courtesy and grace, Mr. President. We'll talk more about the State of the Union, but I'm going to take a break. If you want to join in and give your thoughts, you're always welcome to do so. Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 488-688-6275, or, of course, you can always call in on the Head On Radio Network, 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the present state of the union. As I wrote on the blog, Mark watches so you don't have to. And I've been reading the comments. And, of course, Robert writes, well, I didn't watch and will depend on you. Be listening to the podcast. Terrific, Robert. I try to lay out for you what the president said and, well, the truth behind it. Vicky writes, that's not very responsible of you, Robert. I'm more apt, Vicky writes, to watch the speech myself and shut off the talking heads after the speech. After all, it's their opinion, and I can form my own. I'm thinking Mark made that comment tongue-in-cheek. Well, Vicky, I don't know, maybe half a tongue and half a cheek. When you say you can watch it and form your own opinion, you got to remember the president is not telling you the whole truth, obviously. If you believe the president is telling you the whole truth, then I've got some weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that I want to sell you, along with all those rose petals that they threw on the ground to greet our liberation of Iraq. So clearly the president doesn't have the entire truth. Robert defends me by saying that I'm not a talking head, I wasn't in the rock band, and he's not even sure I can sing. Well, I don't know. I think I'd kind of like to be a talking head. If anyone knows anyone at MSNBC, let them know that they think I'd be a good talking head. Though you're right, Robert, I can't sing. And if you don't believe me, check out the one Inside Scoop musical I did some years ago. It was embarrassing for all concerned. But let's go back to the State of the Union. Again, you're always welcome to give us your opinion at 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON or commenting on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. As I said, the president began by talking about earmarks, kind of a latecomer to that idea, and then he went right on the attack. Got to get rid of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Well, he didn't quite say get rid of it. What he pointed out is that these programs, which are in surplus, unlike his government, will eventually one day be in deficit unless we do something about it. Now, I find that hilarious. I mean, here the president says, and I quote, you're failing them in that duty of protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and this future will one day leave our children with three bad options, huge tax increases, huge deficits, or huge and immediate cuts in benefits. That's right, got to do something, got to cut benefits now so we don't cut them later. He didn't give an answer, of course. But George Bush, you were given massive surpluses, $250 billion surpluses, and now we're in a $300 billion deficit. And instead of worrying about what happens to Social Security in 2017 or 2042, which is actually when it's going to run out right now, how about worrying about the deficit now? Because your deficit is going to cause us huge tax increases, huge deficits, or huge and immediate cuts in our government spending. Not Social Security. Social Security is solvent until 2042. Medicare and Medicaid, they're in a bit more trouble. They're going to not be solvent in the teens. But the budget isn't solvent now, Mr. President. It was under Bill Clinton. It's not under you. And see, the dirty secret is that you've been borrowing money from the Social Security Fund to fund your war in Iraq. That's right, folks. When you pay your payroll taxes and you think it's going to your Social Security, it's not. It's going to the war in Iraq. And so what's Bush's solution? Cut Social Security. Cut Social Security because there's not enough money in the fund because he's spending it all in Iraq. So here's the thing. Before you put our house in order, before you complain that we're spending beyond our means because in 2042 we won't be able to afford Social Security payments, how about putting your own house in order, Mr. President? How about dealing with the budget deficit first? Because I'll tell you another dirty little secret. If we get to 2042 and there's not enough money for Social Security, you know what we'd like you to do? Borrow some money back. You've been borrowing from us to pay for the war in Iraq. Well, in 2042, we'll borrow money from defense spending to pay for Social Security. That'd be fair. No, I'm not worried about it. But listen, by complaining and pretending that Social Security is in some sort of made-up crisis, I'm sure you'll be able to cut the entitlements that keep so many elderly and disabled and poor people from dying in America, and we all know that's your goal. He goes on to praise the No Child Left Behind Act. Yeah, that wonderful thing that takes money from the poor and gives to the rich. Again, every Republican program, it seems, and I'm going to get to one exception in a minute, one that so surprised me that I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, but we'll get to that. But in general, every Republican program, it's very simple, grabs money from the poor, gives it to the rich. Certainly that's true in Social Security, the changes they wanted to do there. It's also true in No Child Left Behind. What does No Child Left Behind do? It looks at the very, very rich schools and the very, very poor schools, public schools in this nation, and it says, you know what, the kids in Beverly Hills are doing really well in school. And the kids in Watts or South Chicago or any of the other poor ghettos in America, they're not doing so well. And instead of looking at the pathology of poverty or the fact that the kids in the poor schools are already not getting enough money, or the fact that, hey, in Beverly Hills, the parents do things for the public school to give it more money. He says, well, you know what? The bad schools in the bad neighborhoods, the poor neighborhoods are failing. The ones in the rich neighborhoods are succeeding. Well, got to penalize the bad schools. Let's give more money to the rich schools. Take more money from the troubled schools. No child left behind. Well, no Beverly Hills child left behind. Just the kids in the middle class and poor families left behind. And he claims, he says, look, how do we know it's working? He says, because students are performing better in reading and math and minority students are closing the achievement gap. Well, let's talk about minority students closing the achievement gap. I mean, you know, given where they started back in, well, Jim Crow times, there was a vast achievement gap. And yes, in America, it's pretty much closed every year. But in the 90s, under Bill Clinton, it was closing a lot faster than now. In fact, many studies suggest it's not closing at all. And those that do are all within the margin of error. So again, bragging about an anemic, at best, victory. But then he goes on and he talks about health care. And then he gives a surprising plan. Surprising because it might actually be a decent idea. And listen, I'm not here just to bash the president. If he's going to give a decent idea, I'm going to support it. But I'm wary, like any good Democrat should be, because he's the president, obviously known for not telling us the truth. But he proposes that people who pay insurance, health insurance, can get tax rebates. And that, you know, they would come off the first money, so it would actually be a progressive tax. Sounds good. The devil's in the details, of course. It's not quite clear how he's going to pay for it. Now, in the speech, he didn't mention how he's going to pay for it. In some of the commentary after the speech, he suggested that those that are having state of the art healthcare, the CEOs that have, you know, the kind of healthcare plans that could fund a Saudi prince, that they would pay taxes on over a certain amount. If that is the proposal, and it's not clear that it is, the idea that those of us that are making hundreds of thousands and are buying, you know, healthcare that gives you free transplants or whatever, we have to pay a bit of tax on those plans over $7,500, so that the rest of us with normal insurance can get a tax break. Well, I got to support that. Obviously, I have to support anything that makes the tax code more progressive. It seemed uncharacteristic of the president, though. So, again, the devil's in the details, and I'm really glad that Charlie Rangel will be head of the Ways and Means Committee. He'll be watching over it, and I trust Congressman Rangel very much. He's very good with the details, and he will catch it on the president. If it is what he says it is, then, you know, I gotta support a good idea even when it comes from an awful president. It could be a bone he's throwing out to the Democrats. I mean, it's interesting to me, though, that it's all proposed to us right now, fresh. The Democrats said they hadn't heard of this idea. So instead of going to the leaders in Congress, talking to Nancy Pelosi or Charlie Rangel or Harry Reid or Ted Kennedy and saying, what do you think about this idea? And going across the aisle, as he said he would do, they could have worked together. I mean, there's been several months between the election. The president's got plenty of policy people. They could have worked together. If this is what the president is truly proposing, they could have come up with something. The Democrats would have agreed to it. And he could have proposed, and here's what I propose tonight, and Kennedy's on board, Pelosi's on board, Rangel's on board. This is true bipartisan government, and we're going to get this done in the next 2 weeks. He didn't do that. Why? Because maybe he doesn't really care about the policy proposal. He doesn't care about making health care more affordable. He wants to get a good soundbite, and he wants to try to grab some Democratic turf. And if you want proof that he's doing it for political reasons rather than policy reasons, then you have to ask, why is he suddenly proposing this idea out of the State of the Union speech? Why? So he can get credit for it. Instead of working with the Democratic leaders in Congress to pass a bill that all of us can support, he wants to get political hay. You know, he does this a lot. I remember the time he talked about spending all this money on AIDS in Africa, and it was his new wonderful proposal, and then he didn't fund it for the next 2 years. He mentions that later in the speech. So we need to be wary of this plan, but I'm not going to diss it completely. If it indeed is what it seems to be, then I will support such a plan. I just wish the president had worked with the Democrats, as he claimed he wanted to, rather than proposing this bright idea out of nowhere. Lots more to talk about, a lot of sort of standard applause lines where we saw, you know, Dick Cheney standing up or Nancy Pelosi standing up. They rarely stood up together. And then, of course, at the end of the speech comes the president's discussion of Iraq. And you could hear a pin drop in the chamber. No clapping. No standing ovations. Every now and then a grunt like, is this guy in a dream world? We'll get to all of that and your calls if you want to join us. 888-488-MARK, 877-4HEAD-ON. I watch the State of the Union so you don't have to. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. surprise.
Head on radionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the State of the Union. And, of course, if you didn't see it, then, hey, I perform a public service. You know, in 1 hour I can give you both what he said, what he didn't say, what he lied about, and the response without having to listen to a bunch of rhetoric. So I'm glad to perform this public service. Actually, I'm going to give a video commentary on the State of the Union next Monday night. It'll be on the web, on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. You'll be able to watch the video. We'll play some of those clips where Pelosi is standing and Cheney is not, and vice versa. Frankly, that was the most amusing part of the State of the Union. Let's go through, though, what the president was saying and on domestically and, of course, on Iraq. He did, after talking about his new health plan, talk about sort of the old warmed-over Republican proposals that everyone knows there's no chance of happening. Things like health savings account, which are really a redistribution of wealth from people who are poor and sick to those who are rich and well. I've never quite understood how logically you can defend a redistribution of wealth from people who are already sick and poor to those who are rich and well. But I guess it takes Republicans to understand things like that. Of course, he wants to stop people from being able to sue doctors who make mistakes. He calls it, quote, protecting good doctors from junk lawsuits, unquote. But, Mr. President, if the lawsuit is junk, then the good doctor wins, and, that's not the problem. The question is, why are you protecting the bad doctors who lose? If you had a proposal that said that if you file a lawsuit against a doctor and you lose, there's some extra payment or something, or for a frivolous lawsuit, the lawyer has to pay something, I have no problem with that. But those aren't your proposals, Mr. President. Your proposals are to cap the awards of the people that do successfully sue their doctors. So the doctor accidentally leaves a scalpel in you and it causes you hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage and you only get $100,000. Those are your proposals. You're not protecting good doctors, Mr. President. You're protecting the bad ones. Well, what else? Well, he talked about immigration. That was another time you could hear the crickets chirp. It's interesting. No one seems to support the president's plan on immigration. The Republicans don't support it because, heck, they want to cost tens of billions of dollars and try to kick out all the illegals and punish them while not punishing the employers at all. The Democrats want to punish the employers without punishing the people who are just trying to make a new life in America. And the president has his slave labor plan, right? Let them in on a temporary basis. Don't allow them to become citizens. Let them be mistreated and then make them go home. Well, that's not something that either side supports. He then goes on and talks about energy independence. Well, you know, he says that in virtually every State of the Union, at least the last two, 3 years, we shouldn't be so dependent on foreign oil. Well, Mr. President, I couldn't agree with you more. But what are you doing about it? Nothing. I mean, the president, you can't just say, like he says, we must help America generate electric power, greater use of clean coal technology, solar and wind energy, clean, safe, and nuclear power. We need battery research for plug-in and hybrid vehicles, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's great, Mr. President. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is? You haven't proposed any programs to help us with these fuels. It's nice to talk about them. I agree with you. But what are you going to do? Well, the president says, we're going to reduce gasoline usage in the United States by 20% in the next 10 years. 20%? Well, that sounds like a good plan. You mean we'll only be using 80% in 10 years of what we're using today? Well, no. If you check on the fine print, you'll see that what he's saying is not that we'll cut 20% from what we're using today, but we'll cut 20% from what's expected we'll be using tomorrow if we continue at the present rate. In other words, we'll stay about the same today instead of increasing 20%, and that's his cut of 20%. Okay. And he says when you do that, we'll have cut our total imports by the equivalent of three-quarters of all the oil we now import from the Middle East. I mean, just compare the rhetoric with the reality, all right? What he's saying sounds like, well, let me repeat what he said. Quote, we're going to reduce gasoline usage in the United States by 20% in the next 10 years. When we do that, we will have cut our total imports by the equivalent of three-quarters of all the oil we now import from the Middle East. Now let's look at the fine print. What he's saying is that he's going to not increase our gasoline usage by the 20% that he expected it to increase, and therefore we won't be increasing our importation of Middle East oil by 75% as he had planned. Yay. But how's he going to do this? I mean, okay, look, keeping our usage flat rather than having it grow, that's a good thing, not nearly as good as he pretends it is, but it's a good thing. How's he going to do it? Are we going to do it through renewable resources, things like hybrids, things like electric energy and wind and solar? No, we're going to use alternative fuels, he says. Not renewable fuels, but alternative fuels. And again, if you read the fine print, what does that mean? What does his advisors tell us? Well, alternative fuels includes using coal, another fossil fuel, actually a dirtier fossil fuel than oil, that will actually increase global warming. Didn't quite put that in there. He talks about fuel economy standards. Again, that's a Democratic idea, the idea that you want to keep cars that get 35, 40, 50 miles per gallon. It's a good thing. But his plan is instead of looking at all the cars in America, he's going to do it per type of car. So if you have an SUV, well, 10 would be great, maybe 15. If you have a hybrid, well, then we'll require it to be 100. And if it's only 85, no hybrid for you. Well, I don't think it's very hard to see the problem with allowing different CAFE standards for different kinds of cars rather than looking at the overall fleet. It will just encourage people to go to the gas-guzzling cars. Devil's in the details. He also wants to double our capacity for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Well, if that were free, I guess I wouldn't have a problem with it. But it's not free. The president wants to spend $69 a barrel of oil on that reserve at a time when oil is selling at $54 a barrel. That's pure profit for his friends in the oil industry. Didn't mention that in his speech. I mean, here it is. The Democrats have just cut all those taxpayer giveaways to oil companies. At least they did it in the House. We'll see whether the Senate follows suit and whether Bush vetoes it. And now, by filling up the petroleum reserve, he again wants to give huge taxpayer dollars directly to oil companies. Why should we pay oil companies more than what the oil's worth? Heck, we're buying in bulk. Lots of bulk. If anything, we should get a bulk rate price and pay less. Again, things you'll never hear the details on. He goes on to say that, we need to give his nominees an up or down hearing. That was fun watching the Republicans jump up and the Democrats sit down. Of course, when Bill Clinton said that, the Democrats jumped up and the Republicans sat down because the Republicans did their best not to give hundreds of Clinton nominees an up or down hearing in the Senate. Let's face it, all this stuff about judicial nominees and we need them for the people, and we all know what's going on here. The Democrats don't want the right-wing judges. The Republicans don't want the left-wing judges. It's got nothing to do with fairness and everything to do with politics. And, of course, that's what the president was playing. He went on to say, we've made critical protections to guard the homeland. No, you haven't, Mr. President. For 4 years, you've been against protections to protect our homeland security. You've called it regulation for nuclear and chemical plants. It's only the Democrats that, of course, have proposed these things. It was part of the 100 hours. And they've been following the September 11th commission. And hopefully this time, they're going to sign it. That's it for domestic policy. It was interesting that he began on it, I guess because he knew that Iraq was such a failure that he didn't want to begin talking about that. But when we come back, I'm going to delve into the State of the Union on foreign policy because it gets actually a lot scarier. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right, they include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense.
only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Hey, Ranger, why do you have to remind people to be careful with fire?
Well, Mr. Mountain Lion, sometimes people need to be reminded about certain things, like not to run with scissors or let children play with wild dingoes, and to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you're saying is that people can be careless and forgetful?
Pretty much.
That makes me very sad.
Sounds like someone needs a hug.
Back off or I'll turn your hat into confetti!
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, State Forester, and the Ag Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, discussing the State of the Union. I suffered and watched it, so you don't have to. And in going through the domestic policy proposals, wherever Bush appeared to be reaching out to the Democrats, I say appeared because, as we've said, he would sort of give these new proposals he hadn't discussed with the Democrats. Pelosi would stand up, and whenever he appeared to the right wing, Cheney would. There's a difference, I mean, because usually he just goes toward the right. But when he talked about Iraq, well, you could hear a pin drop. You saw people look at each other like, what is he talking about? Of course, he mentioned 9/11, and of course he talked about the enemy. But does the president really know who the enemy is? Let's read what he said. He said, it's becoming clear we face an escalating danger from the Sunni extremists. They are, of course, the ones that are part of Al-Qaeda. He says, Al-Qaeda and its followers are Sunni extremists possessed by hatred, commanded by a harsh and narrow ideology. Take almost any principle of civilization, the president says. Their goal is the opposite. They preach with threats, instruct with bullets and bombs, and promise paradise for the murder of the innocent. Well, that's true. But the president says it's also become clear that we face an escalating danger from Shia extremists who are just as hostile to America and are also determined to dominate the Middle East. Many are known to take direction from the regime in Iran, which is funding and arming terrorists like Hezbollah, a group second only to Al-Qaeda and the American lives it has taken. Well, that part's true too. But now listen to this third part, he says. The Shia and Sunni extremists are different faces of the same totalitarian threat. Whatever slogans they chant, when they slaughter the innocent, they have the same wicked purposes. They want to kill Americans, kill democracy in the Middle East, and gain the weapons to kill on an even more horrific scale. Well, that, Mr. President, shows what you don't understand about the Shia and the Sunni. Because however they feel about America, and admittedly, they're no friends of ours, they hate each other more. They each want control. Are you forgetting that in the 1980s, Iran and Iraq killed 1 million people in the last Shia-Sunni war? And so what's your proposal, Mr. President? Let's be very, very clear on what your proposal is, okay? You're supporting Sunni dictators in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, and they're vicious dictators, okay? Kind of a lot like Saddam Hussein, actually. You're supporting a Shia government in Iraq, a guy who only got in power, Prime Minister al-Maliki, only got in power because Muqtada al-Sadr, you remember him, he's that thug down in Sadr City that killed so many American troops, only because he supported you. And you're looking at his rival, another Shia leader, Abdul Aziz al-Hakim, and he's got the vast support of Iran. Here's a clue, Mr. President. When your vicious enemy is attacking your vicious enemy, what's the best way to deal with the solution? I'll give you a hint. Aiding both of them and putting American lives in the middle, not the smartest way. Anyone, whether Machiavelli or Metternich or even great Chinese general what was his name? Lu Xu, the one who talked about how to use your enemy's force against you, will tell you that if your enemy's fighting your enemy, what do? You quietly sneak out the door. Heck, remember when the Soviet Union and China were at it? We very smartly let them go at it. We did not beat the Soviet Union by invading Moscow. We beat them by quietly letting them deal with the internal inconsistencies in their own policies and by fighting with China. So what are we doing now? We're aiding all sides. We're giving money to all sides. We're giving American troops to all sides. And, you know, there are countries where you have a democratic government elected by a wide, diverse range of people that are being taken over by civil war. I'll give you the example. It's called Lebanon. We have there's a whole bunch of European troops there, but they're not doing anything. Look, if you really cared about democracy, you'd help Lebanon. But get out of the way of Shias and Sunnis that are busy killing each other. Let's go to Sarge on line one. Sarge, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes, you know, one thing conspicuously absent last night was Katerina.
No mention whatsoever.
And, you know, I've been receiving calls all day from the Gulf Coast telling me, that makes us angry.
Because it should.
This really has a bunch of people mad, but Mr. Bush can omit it from his speeches all he wants to. I talked to Dennis Kucinich personally. I talked to him directly, and he is extremely interested, and he told me he's going to appoint a staffer. The staffer's going to get with me. He's going to investigate what's going on, and he's going to report directly to Dennis. So,
you know what? I'm sure he will do that.
He will. I believe it. Dennis K.
I know he will, and that's a good sign. It really is.
Yeah, and I found out more things going on down on the coast in Jackson County today that just curled my hair because it is just horrendous.
Sarge, at your request, and it was a good request, I have already scheduled Jim Yancey to be on my show. He's going to be here a week from tomorrow, Thursday, February 1st, and we will devote an entire hour to what's going on down there. So hold your fire for now. And I'm sure you're going to call in on that day, and we'll have a lot of talk then, all right?
And also, one thing else he omitted was veterans benefits and the VA and taking care of these troops when they come home, shot up and banged up and tore to pieces.
And the reason he didn't mention it is because this is a president that doesn't want to talk about his failures.
Well, Mark, I'm going to let you go. I just wanted to check in with you and let you know that.
Well, no, it's a good point. It's a very good point. He did not mention Katrina. I've been through the speech several times. Absolutely no mention about it, nor VA benefits. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, the one thing, the Democratic respondent, he mentioned New Orleans, but I wish he had said the whole Gulf Coast instead of just New Orleans. Because remember, we had towns that were totally wiped out here. Waverly, Mississippi doesn't exist. Waverly doesn't exist anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Although, you know, Senator Webb, he only had 8 minutes, and at least he mentioned the problem, whereas George Bush in an hour didn't seem to think it was that important.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Sarge. I appreciate it. I just wanted to say we only got a couple minutes left, and I'm going to do more, particularly on the Iraq portion of the speech. You'll can hear on the Head On Radio Network next Tuesday or Monday night. You can actually see video of this. But the main thing is the president doesn't seem to understand is who's fighting whom. He has no earthly idea. He imagines it's Iraq's elected government against, I don't know, al-Qaeda or enemies, whereas it's really the Shia against the Sunni. It's an old, old battle that we are sticking our noses in the middle of. And he says, this is what he says. He says, Iraq's leaders know our commitment is not open-ended. They've promised to deploy more of their own troops to secure Baghdad. They must do so. They've pledged they will confront violent radicals of any faction or political party. You know, they say a lot of things. But have they acted on any of it? How many Americans will have to die because Maqtadal al-Sadr's front man, the prime minister of Iraq, is busy spouting niceties to the president of the United States? How many more will have to die? And it's not just there. It's Afghanistan that's going back to al-Qaeda. It's Lebanon that is in a colossal mess, frankly. Dangerous. I mean, here's a country that's a democratic government about to be overthrown by Iran. No troops. nothing to do. We are an empty threat. South Korea is under threat by North Korea, which we've just heard is now selling nuclear technology to Iran. There are real dangers out there. But by putting all of our troops in Iraq, by putting all of our eggs in one basket, what are we doing? We're taking troops, and I don't mind using the military when it's needed, when it's necessary, but we're taking troops from ways they can truly protect American security and throwing them in the mix of a civil war cauldron. We don't even know which way is up. Well, we're literally supporting both sides as they kill each other. And it seems the only person who doesn't know what's going on is the President of the United States. He ended the State of the Union speech in the way that, frankly, every president since Ronald Reagan praised Lenny Skutnik back in 25 years ago by praising ordinary people. Lenny Skutnik, of course, 25 years ago was the man who jumped in the icy river to save a lot of people after a plane crashed in the Potomac. So George Bush praised a lot of people. The most important, as far as I'm concerned, of course, is Wesley Autry, who at a Harlem subway station did an amazingly scary thing, literally jumping on the tracks and held a man that was having seizures down while the train went over them. Yikes. But an American hero nonetheless. This president is never the one to jump on an American and save their lives. He simply sends our troops off to their death. And one day, maybe we'll get through to him. But if not, we're just going to have to cut off the funding and make them come home. We'll have more on that. But first of all, tomorrow I've got debate Thursday. We're going to debate with Mike Lane on the State of the Union and everything else going on and whether we need to apologize for slavery. All that and more, 2 o'clock tomorrow. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved a non-binding resolution to oppose the president's Iraq policy. The Democrats, with support of Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, are supporting a wartime repudiation of the president. The measure will be taken up by the full Senate next week. President Bush delivered his State of the Union speech last night before the new Democratic Majority Congress. He asked for more time for his new policy of a troop surge in Iraq to work with a plea of give it a chance. Newly elected Senator James Webb of Virginia delivered the Democratic response. He said the president took the country into war recklessly. In Baghdad today, two U.S. Marines were killed in a Sunni-dominated neighborhood in Baghdad during a heavy battle with insurgent gunmen. Iraq's defense ministry says in the joint U.S.-Iraqi action, as many as 30 militants were killed. A U.S. government official says that 4 out of the 5 Americans who were killed when their security company's helicopter crashed yesterday in Baghdad had been shot in the head execution style. The plane, owned by Blackwater USA, may have been shot down before it crashed in a dangerous Sunni neighborhood. Republican Senator John McCain blames Vice President Dick Cheney for the problems with the Iraq war. He said it was, quote, terribly mishandled. He also criticized former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and said he will go down in history as one of the worst defense secretaries. The U.S. Air Force launched another airstrike against suspected terrorists in Somalia, according to a U.S. defense official. It is unclear if the intended targets were hit. The London Daily Telegraph reports North Korea is sharing information about its nuclear weapons program with the Iranian military. The paper says Pyongyang may help Tehran to conduct nuclear missile tests. Israeli President Moshe Katsav has asked for a temporary leave of absence. He faces rape and abuse of power charges. He has been under pressure to resign, including a call today from Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. Former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega will be released from a U.S. prison in September. He says he plans to head back home immediately to fight his conviction in Panama for killing two political opponents. The Boston Globe reports that Senator John Kerry will not seek the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination. He is expected to make the announcement on the Senate floor this afternoon. An illegal immigration sweep across Southern California has resulted in 761 arrests this past week. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The Budapest Zoo reports the first rhino in the world conceived by artificial insemination was born yesterday. The female baby weighs 128 pounds and has not been named yet. The World Economic Forum at Davos, Switzerland this week will focus on climate change and troubles in the Middle East. The prestigious four-day event will host 2,400 of the world's wealthiest and most powerful people. Today, the Senate rejected the minimum wage bill passed by the House because lawmakers want it to include additional tax cuts for restaurants and other businesses. State Farm has settled a lawsuit filed by 640 homeowners after Hurricane Katrina. The insurer will pay those claims worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The new chief executive of Home Depot will receive a much smaller compensation package than his predecessor. Frank Blake will earn just under $9 million compared to nearly $24 million that Bob Nardelli earned. China says within 2 years it will have the largest number of Internet users in the world, beating out the U.S., which now holds the title. Currently, 210 of America's 300 million people are online, while 137 million Chinese regularly use the Internet. Light sweet crude trading at $54.95 a barrel. And taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 60 points at 12,593. The Nasdaq is up 33 points and the S&P 500 up 9. There's more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before?